Reset the podcast is brought to you in association with Liars, the non-alcoholic spirits brand. Whether it's low alcohol or no alcohol, Liars helps you enjoy your classic favourite cocktails.
Hello everyone, my name is Suki Thompson. Welcome to Reset the podcast. A place for you to get some inspiration and advice to help you live a more fulfilling work life. I do hope that your journey to feel more connected, more inspired, just a bit more energized starts here. Take a moment now with me to reset. My guest today is the very definition of what resetting means, so much so that she's done it twice. Caroline Pearce is a former Great Britain heptathlete and bobsledder. She's also a sports host, author, and fitness expert. In this podcast, Caroline talks about the challenges she's faced when transitioning out of her professional sports career, a transition that will prepare her for her next big reset. A move to Los Angeles from the UK when asked to become the presenting face of a sport she knew almost nothing about. But as she says during our interview, her view on life is to say yes and then learn how to do it afterwards. A typically positive perspective from a woman who certainly knows how to grab life with both hands. Caroline, so lovely to see you. How is LA today?
Oh, it's lovely to see you as well. It's wonderful. I've been so grateful this whole lockdown of the sunny weather we've had, and we've got another bright sunny day today. So can't complain. Thank you.
Oh, well, I'm very excited that I'm going to be talking to you today, because for so many people, this whole last year, for some, has been a moment where they've done more exercise. They've really thought about their bodies, and it's been a chance to not commute and get on the bike or go out for walks. And other people, it's been a really challenging time, and actually they haven't done as much exercise as they wanted to. So I really wanted to spend some time talking to you, because you know probably more than almost anyone has been a top sportswoman. You're now very much a motivational sports person. You talk about sport, you know, understand about well-being. So there's so much for us to cover today.
Yeah.
But I'd like to start kind of where you started, really, as an elite sportswoman. Mm. You did two things. So first of all, you competed in the pentathlon and then in bobsleigh. And you come from the UK. So how on earth did that happen?
Yeah, it's an interesting transition. So I was a track and field athlete. I loved every event, every hurdles and high jump and long jump and shot put. So I began with the pentathlon, which is the five events. And then as you get older, you move on to the heptathlon, which is the seven events. And I think in the UK, most people will be familiar with Jessica Ennis or Denise Lewis before her, you know, and Denise Lewis was my role model. So I competed for many years for Great Britain in heptathlon and won national championship, international honors, etc. And then a lot of track athletes get recruited in, well, I say a lot, the crazy ones, the ones that are willing to throw themselves down a bobsled track. You know, quite often we get the opportunity to trial out for bobsled. And I did it at Bath University on like an artificial push track, no ice or whatever, and qualified for the Great Britain team. And it went on this journey of finding myself out in Calgary, Canada, hurtling down a bobsled track at 80 plus miles per hour, 5 G's of force, and wondering how this happened. If you've got that speed and power and you're willing to do it, and I saw an opportunity to maybe go further with bobsled at that point in my career. So I became a member of the British bobsled team just for a very short period of time. Injuries derailed my sort of elite athletic career, if you like, but it was an incredible experience. And even after the years and accolades I spent in athletics, in track, it's always the bobsled that's more interesting to people.
Well, I just think it would be absolutely terrifying. And, you know, I don't even know what I imagine somebody in bobsled would look like, but you know, you are, and obviously people can't see you, but you are, you know, very beautiful. And no, I just couldn't imagine that that's what you'd go and do.
No, it's that speed and it's that power. And I wasn't the driver. My driver at the time, Nico Minicello, they learn the track, and it's very much a subtle weaving of body movement as you go down. You know, you've got to turn into the, instead of doing the preparation, you've got to turn into the corners and know the track, because the slight wrong movement by you loses milliseconds, you know. And it's also crucial to that finish time. And then my job's to put on the brakes as the brake woman at the end, and it's like the biggest deadlift you've ever done in your life. So I was probably a little stronger then than I am now, but this, you just get out and out genuine athletes that are strong and fast and a little bit crazy.
Gosh, wow, well, how amazing. so you'd spent all this time training, being an athlete, and then there's a moment when I guess you stop, and you know, this podcast is called Reset, so yeah. There must have been a moment for you when you went, right, I've now got to reset my life. I've got to stop doing that for whatever reason. And maybe it was an injury, you said. What then happened? How did you come to terms with that?
Yeah, and it's actually been widely studied how athletes overcome that feeling of suddenly, who am I? What is my identity? And it was a big reset moment for me. I mean, luckily, my studies were always important to me. I'd got my undergraduate and postgraduate degrees from Loughborough University in sports science, exercise physiology. I lived and breathed everything to do with movement and training and exercise. But I did, I had that movement, that moment where I thought, well, I've always been an athlete. I referred to as the athlete. I thought of myself as the athlete. It's sort of, well, what am I now? Who am I? And it was definitely a transition period where I struggled a little bit with what was next. Not because I didn't have interests and passions or qualifications, but just because I think I wasn't willing to let go of that. And for me, like you said, it was injury. I had bone on bone in my left knee. It wasn't a sudden injury. It wasn't like from this day onward, you physically can't do it anymore. It was a gradual wear and tear that got me to the point where I just couldn't train the way I needed to train to compete at that kind of level. And I thought, well, I need to start my next career and what that might be. So, you know, a lot of, I didn't fight it and I didn't force it, but I sort of became open to new opportunities. I moved to London. I've been living in Loughborough, you know, even post my studies, because it was the most fantastic place to train and compete and that sort of environment for sport. And I utilized my background. And the very first opportunity that came my way was the company Powerplate, that still almost 20 years later I work for now. And it's the vibration training technology that some people may have seen. And it just started with just a chance meeting, an opportunity to use the machine for my own rehabilitation. So to use it for my knee, I had bone on bone in my left knee. My muscles were wasting quite significantly. And everything about this technology and whole body vibration training fitted with my studies and what I'd learned about how the body responded. So it was a very organic transition to become part of this company that was very early days at the time. And I got to experience a bit of everything. Media, they'd send me out to America to do infomercials and training. And I was going to Dubai to teach the course and everything that went behind it. So it was a very sort of organic experience and building of this relationship that I still have with them today, where I got to work with other athletes using the technology, then work with people with disabilities that wanted to use the technology to sort of regain movement and mobility, and then people that wanted to get fit. So that sort of gave me, you know, an avenue and somewhere to sort of target my studies and my passion for sport. But I still had that craving for performance and that sense of wanting to be on a stage and prepare for a specific date or whatever. And that's what really sort of got me to look into television. And Gladiators was a television show.
Yes. Let's come on to that in a second.
I'm running away with it.
I'm going to do that. I just want to go back to the Powerplate. It's so interesting that, you know, you went to a business like that. And it was very entrepreneurial and innovative. Yeah. And actually, Powerplate, I've got a Powerplate, but you know, you used to see them everywhere, but you don't really see them so much now. Is it technology that's still used? Why does it work so well?
Yeah, and they're still very much around, and we sort of call it the best kept secret in fitness, because sometimes you either won't notice it's there or be aware of the capabilities of Powerplate. But the very first use of vibration training was with the Russian cosmonauts back in the 50s, and they used it to improve their bone and muscle mass before they were going to be in this this weightless environment. And they found that they maintained their muscle and bone mass far better than the American counterparts on their space expedition at the same time. So the very first use of vibration training was bone mass, was improving bone density and muscle mass. So it's sort of rooted in a slightly more sort of medical origins, if you like. And then it went on to be used with athletes to improve mobility, performance, that fast twitch muscle activation, recovery, etc., and sort of evolved to be a staple in many fitness clubs and gyms and studios and performance, etc. So for me, that the passion has been, one, I had a personal experience. I used it to rehab my knee and I thought, wow, there's something in this. The vibration essentially causes your muscles to contract and relax automatically. So it's a bit like if you touch a burning hot plate, you don't think about it. You don't say, oh, this feels hot, I'll pull my hand away. It's a reflex response. So when you stand in an exercise position, you don't just stand upright, you stand in an exercise position like a squat or a lunge or a push-up, the vibration will cause your muscle contractions about 30 to 50 times per second, depending on the level you've set the machine. And with that comes increased blood flow and lymph flow and all the benefits that come from circulation. So it's almost a one-stop shop for your preparation, your stretching, your mobility, improving strength without the impact and loading of adding weights, although you can do that as well. And then flushing out that recovery, just using it passively to massage outer thigh, where a lot of women suffer cellulite, triceps, tight IT band, all those things, to just help recover faster as well. So it's the technology has been around a lot longer than people think, but the machine has continued to evolve and get better. So I think once you're aware of it, you'll start seeing it in more places, because it's very much there. It's just knowing what to do with it.
Yes, absolutely. You then went on to TV and Gladiators. Mm. So, I remember Gladiators so well. Oh, you were ice. You were ice, weren't you?
Mm. I had this sort of position that was my opening move. Yeah, it was, and they called me ice based on that winter sports experience with bobsled. So they dyed my hair white blonde, a little like blue tips to it, and the silver costume. And they created this mean character for me, which didn't really sit with my personality. The original Gladiators with Jet and Lightning, they were just themselves. They were just themselves. But with our version of it, sort of Gladiators 2, if you like, it copied the American revival. And it was to sort of make us all a bit more characterized. And, you're going to be a character and this is how you're going to play it. And you've got to be mean and you've got to be this and whatever. So it was, it was a little bit of acting, probably poorly on my part. But we had a lot of fun with it. And it was getting to just be active and compete. Do it on television. I think I kind of forgot that this was a show. I just wanted to win every contest. The athlete in me still wanted to win. But it was a lot of fun, and it gave me a taste for television.
Yes. And you've gone on and carried on in TV, haven't you? You've done presenting and So did that help you kind of carry on with that part of your career?
Yeah, it sort of married my passion for sport and with sort of being, broadcasting and television, because I specifically went into sports broadcasting and sports presenting. And, I started with The World's Strongest Man on Channel 5, and I was hosting that, which was a lot of fun, a Christmas favourite. And when BT Sport launched in 2013 as a network, as a channel, then they got the rights to the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. So people that are familiar with Conor McGregor, and if you're not familiar with the sport, it's mixed martial arts. And I didn't know anything about it at all. Really, I could name a couple of fighters, that was it at the time. But they said, we think you'd be a good fit to host our weekly show, sort of reviewing and previewing the action. So I've always had the mentality that you say yes and you learn. So I said yes, and I just watched hours and hours and hours of tape and footage. And as the weeks and months went by, I just fell in love with the sport and the personalities behind the athletes, the fighters. And it's essentially what's brought me out to America, really. I went on to work directly for the UFC, then Fox Sports. And this sport that I knew very little about has almost become, has become a huge part of my life and passion and friends and people that I'm involved with. So it's funny how sometimes something you don't choose, but an opportunity that comes your way can very much dictate where you go with your life. Because I don't know whether I'd be here in Los Angeles for the last 5 years now. if it wasn't for that.
Yes, I was going to say, because it's quite a big reset, isn't it? Moving from one country to another, even when you've got a job and, you know, and particularly, I guess, you know, the kind of roles that you've got, you're very much, it's about you. You know, it's not it's not just a company and in a standard sort of role, is it? Yeah. So how did that feeling come about?
Yeah, it was, do you know, I think I'd always felt like I'd live here one day. Just, I think even young, something in me that thought, you know, I love the weather. I've always wanted to live in, you know, a sunny climate. I love the outdoor sort of fitness and training and sports kind of atmosphere here, and it's so motivating. But I visited Los Angeles with PowerPlate actually several years before, and I didn't fall in love with the place. I think because it was before Uber and, you know, those days, I didn't get to see it or experience it in the way that I'd pictured it or imagined it. So I didn't come away from there sort of having fallen in love with it. But it was several years later, our show on BT Sport moved on the road, so we're no longer tied to the studio. And I was coming out to Las Vegas a lot for the fights, and I'd go via Los Angeles. And I started to see it differently and experience the scene within media and entertainment and the beaches a little bit more. But it's been the biggest challenge of my life, for sure. The first one was revamping, resetting after my athletic career ended. And although we speak the same language here and, you know, you think it would be an easy transition, you know, I didn't have exact work set up. I definitely had to go about finding the sponsor and the management and the jobs and whatever, which I did. I spent a year coming back to what I was doing. But everything worked differently. I felt like an 18-year-old learning how to do their banking again, learning taxes again, you know, all these kind of things. It was difficult, and things don't mean the same here. Lots of people here like to take meetings all the time that don't come to it. You know, it was just all, it's breaking through some of what can be a little bit surface level and facade or whatever, which, you know, it's, but then digging deeper and finding the good people, the right opportunities, you know, and enjoying what it is. But it took a good year, and I had a lot of fun, but it definitely took a good year of thinking at moments, what am I doing? Did I do the right thing? You know, if you come here for a job, I think it's a lot easier than if you come here self-employed freelancer looking and evolving opportunities. And I was lucky because a lot of what I was doing in the UK, I could still do from here. PowerPlate said, we'd love to have you in California. There's so many gyms and facilities you can help us with. And BT Sport said, well, great, you're closer to Vegas. We can have you do those. So a lot of those things lined up for me, but the new opportunities definitely took a while to establish myself, because in the UK, you know, journalists would call me and ask me to write pieces on certain things to do with fitness. And I thought, well, no one knows me here. No one's calling. Yes. No one's asking for my opinion anymore. So yeah, it was sort of taking a step back. You know, life was a lot more expensive here as well.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure.
In order to move forward.
And, you know, we all imagine that in LA, and we've been to LA, that there's a massive pressure to look good. And, you know, of course, that, you know, you do, and that's been your life and your, you know, what you're involved in. Do you feel that pressure on, you know, what your body looks like, how you are portrayed to the world?
Yes and no. So it wasn't so much pressure what I looked like, but I kind of fell back in love with the fitness industry when I moved here. I think I just was going through the motions a little bit. I was doing a little bit more television than I was fitness and well-being work when I left the UK. And out here, I just felt more inspired because I was seeing incredibly fit people that were lifting more than me, looked fitter or acting fitter in the gym. And I was used to being the one that sort of went into the gym and was the, you know, the sporty one. But it actually inspired me, and I saw more opportunities for the work that I do out here as well. To be honest, it's almost been come a little bit later, as I turned 40 last September. And I don't know whether it was self-imposed as opposed to this environment, but the environment's only ever inspired me. And I know that will be different for other people, but definitely something surrounding turning 40 just made me, and I'm getting over it now, but made me think, oh, I've got to do everything I can to keep hold of looking good, feeling good, and feeling youthful in a town which is essentially, for a lot of, you know, a lot of ways, a lot of young people. Yes. And I don't feel any different. I don't feel any older. And I certainly have a lot of role models that are my age or older as well, which I'm sort of focused on. But it was definitely sort of, I'd say, in the last year that I noticed that a little bit more.
And what have you done to get yourself over that? Because I think all of us, when we go through those milestone birthdays or moments in time, and, you know, I think when I've done it, you kind of have to sit down and give yourself a bit of a good talking to, some of which is inspiring to push you on to do the other stuff. And some of it's to go, do you know what? It's okay. I don't look I'm not like I was in the past, but that's okay because I've got other things I can do now.
Exactly. And I actually don't feel any different. I don't know that I necessarily look overly, you know, too different to 5 years ago when I moved here. I think it is just that self-talk, and it's with everything. You can convince yourself you're right or you're wrong, whatever you focus on. And for me, I'm just losing my earpod, hold on. So for me, it was very much about, it's another day, you know, don't let the digits determine who you are. I feel like people respond a little bit differently when you say I'm 37, 38, 39, okay, you know. When you say 40, you get a reaction in some way, you know, whether even if it's a good reaction, oh my God, you got it for you, or wow, you know, but it just, see, I think we, and growing up, I think 40, you think, oh, 40 is when I'm older, you know? So it's just reminding yourself that it is just another number, and just changing that self-talk that you have with yourself. That's what I did a lot of. Once I'd done a little bit of celebrating with the, I was actually quite excited and I embraced it. Because at first I decided with the year of COVID that I wasn't going to recognize or acknowledge this number. I deserve to be 39 for another year because we lost a year. But, you know, I thought, you know, we're not all granted another day, and it's worth celebrating. And a friend of mine actually said something really interesting. Her father died in his 60s, and everyone said he was young to die. And she said, if you're young to die in your 60s, how can you consider yourself old when you're alive? You know, it's sort of just reframing that a little bit. And I like that. And I have role models now that are in 50s and older than me. So I think it's just focusing on what's important, how you feel, being the best you can be, and the number can...
Absolutely. And I love that phrase that your friend said. That's very true. It's very true. You know, one of the things that we get asked about a lot in our workshops is there are sort of maybe two or three types of people. There are people, well, there are four. There are people like you who are elite athletes, and then you kind of carry on and make it your life. I think there's people probably like me that sports a very important part of my life. Has been forever, but I still need to be outside and doing some exercise every day. Otherwise, you know, I just don't feel good. So I don't need a lot of motivation to do it. It's just part of what it is for me. Then I think there are people that want to exercise because they know it's good for them, but they kind of struggle, but they belong to a gym or they get themselves out for a walk or whatever. And then there are the people that really don't like exercise very much, and they find it a real struggle, and they absolutely know that they should do some more. And I think particularly during lockdown, some people have done more exercise and have really turned over a new leaf. And I've seen lots of people via Zoom who have looked so much more healthy and have lost some weight, but also just are much more comfortable with how they are, and they feel better for it. And other people who have just haven't been able to, and for all sorts of reasons. Can you help us understand or motivate us into those people that really struggle? What we can do?
Yeah, and I talk to these people a lot. You know, that's part of my job. And during lockdown, the work I've done via Zoom, online, app training, etc., has been trying to keep people active, motivated during this time, whether you can't leave the house, the weather's bad outside, whatever, you know, even if you can go outside, whatever it might be. And I think the biggest issue when you're that person that doesn't like to, really struggling to get started, is the amount of pressure and expectation you put on yourself. I think we either think we've got to be spending an hour training a day or nothing, that there's nothing in between. So I always say, just set quite a low expectation for yourself. Don't commit to an hour and I need to do it every day. You might start 2-3 times a week, 10, 15 minutes. And it doesn't sound like a lot. And for those of us that like to exercise a lot, and for even the people that don't, be like, oh, what's the point in that? And, you know, it's that all or nothing kind of mentality. But it's just about establishing a feeling and a routine. Because exercise, as most of us know, releases those endorphins, the serotonin, the feel-good hormones. And it's addictive. But the key is to just take the thinking out of it. You can talk yourself out of anything. You can sit there and say, well, it's a bit cold. I've only got 10 minutes. The kids are going to come home. Dinner, you know, the washing's it. You know, you can do all of those things, in which 10 minutes is gone. You could have just done it. So quite often I say, set sort of small goals, not too ambitious. Like I said, a couple of times a week, 10, 15, 20 minutes. You'll always find you do more. You'll always do more than you think you're going to do once you put your shoes on. But also just make it an appointment with yourself. So in the same way, you know, you've got your Zoom at 12 and kids lunch at 1, you know, whatever it is, put it in your calendar, write it in that diary so that that's your appointment with yourself. No excuses. It's the same way if you have to be at the dentist or the doctor's, you don't miss it, you don't skip it, it's there. Just do it. Set up your environment to make it more conducive as well. Have your training shoes at the ready. Get a little outfit out, you know, ready if you're going to do it first thing in the morning because you've set your alarm a bit earlier. And I think get support as well. Even if you can't physically be with somebody else to do it, if it's not someone in your family, do it via Zoom. Do online workouts. The app I'm a part of called FitOn that I was telling you about previously, it's free. It's called FitOn. It's free. And we have beginners, intermediates. We have advanced. We have 10-minute workouts, up to 30-minute workouts. We have Pilates, yoga, HIIT, all these different things for myself and some other fabulous trainers. And you can do what we call a FitOn party, which means you just invite your friends and you're on screen together doing it at the same time. So I think sometimes not only making an appointment with yourself, but if you've committed to someone else and said, okay, when we finish work or before we start work, lunchtime, we're going to do that together for 15, 20 minutes, you're more likely to keep that appointment. And I think one of the biggest things is find something you enjoy. Don't keep pushing yourself to do, I don't know what it might be, a HIIT class. If that's something you hate, you know, you're less likely to do it. There has to be some enjoyment in it. You know, pick a dance workout, pick a yoga workout, whatever it might be, and keep it varied as well. So, you keep your body getting and responding. So there's so many, and I write a lot of this on my Instagram and you know, my socials, other socials as well. It's really just about the small little steps that then make something become a habit. And I bet you'll get to the point where you won't feel good not doing it. You'll yes. feel frustrated when you haven't done it. I'm not going to say everyone's going to suddenly love exercise and it's going to be their main thing, but you'll certainly get to the point where it becomes a part of your day or your week or your life, and you feel good for doing it.
Yeah.
So I could probably go on. There's so many, but there's lots of ways to help.
Yeah, but I love that point of you don't have to do the whole hour. And, you know, and actually, I think for me, one of the wonderful things about lockdown that we've learned by doing, you know, all these Zoom fitness things you can do is just the variety. Absolutely, yeah, right.
So much variety.
There's so many different people, different types. It's fantastic. But also that point that you can do quite a lot in 10 minutes.
Yeah. And bite-sized fitness. You know, we call it bite-sized fitness. You could even accumulate it throughout the day. You do 10 minutes here, you might do another 10 minutes later. There's so many workouts. You don't need to fully get changed to do it. Just, you know, kick off your shoes or put your running shoes on, you know, and something comfortable. We're all living in our sweats right now. I've got tracksuit bottoms going on the bottom down here. And just do it, you know, and then get back to your desk. It's just, you'll be amazed at how much you can accumulate little bite-sized bits of fitness through the day that isn't a big hour, 30-minute chore or task that you might be sort of perceiving it to be.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely brilliant. You are such a positive person. You're such you've got a lovely, positive thing about you. Oh. Has there ever been a time when you've just gone, I don't want to be positive today? I just, you know, this is really hard. And how do you deal with that?
Oh gosh, of course. Yeah. And you know, I like to be positive. I feel I come across positive, and I almost train my mind to try and switch into that mode when I don't feel that way. But one thing, you know, I've heard in the past, and it played out a lot for me when I was training with my sport, because you can't always be on it to 100%. Well, sometimes it's okay to just be okay. You know, it doesn't always have to be your A game, your top game, the most motivated self. Sometimes I'll have those days and I'll have a little word with myself. Like, why do I feel like this? I feel a bit heavy. I feel a bit, everything's sort of frustrating me or annoying me today. And I just go, okay, so don't have to fight that today. You know, today it's okay to just be okay. Set your routine, do the things you need to do. It might not be as much as you hoped or wanted to achieve for that day, but it's just being kinder to ourselves, really. And usually chances are I wake up the next day and I feel renewed, and you know, I feel better again. I wonder what all the fuss was yesterday. Sometimes we don't even have a reason for it, and that's fine. Sometimes we do, but I think just sometimes it's okay to be okay.
I absolutely right, it is okay to not be okay the whole time. And so Caroline, what's next for you? What are the things as we come out of the kind of global pandemic? You know, tough time for people that, like you, that have been in TV, that are in sport. What are you looking forward to?
And that's it. You know, my life's been drastically different than last year. I was always traveling a lot. I lost contracts of the television work that I did and had to sort of, reset again with the online work that I've done. But it has been one of the most satisfying times, I think, in my life, in the sense the community of women and men that write to me and saying, you know, your workouts have got me through the lockdown. You know, I found it very motivating, inspiring. So I want to carry that on just because we're coming out of lockdown and I will be on the road and I will be sort of doing more of what I consider my usual work. I don't want to lose that community and that support and that sort of fitness family that I've found and I've been a part of online. So it's still going to be very important for me to continue to produce that content, to grow our app FitOn and get that out to people and expand with the nutrition side of things as well. But I'm looking forward to coming home to the UK, hopefully very soon. And I'm looking forward to continuing, you know, my own work in television and sports television and getting back to those live events that bring so much energy and zest to what I do. But it, for me, it's going to be to just build upon, I think, the foundation that I feel I've created during lockdown and the community and keep that strong, because I think a lot of people are going to come out of this lockdown in one of two ways. They're going to either come out of it and feel energized and motivated to work out because you're outside, you're around people and whatever. Or those people that have felt they've had this safe place and it's become, you know, I work out at home. I do think that this is safe, and going back out into the world can be a little bit daunting. So I'd say to those people, you can continue everything you're doing at home. You know, it can be a slow transition back. You don't have to suddenly go to the gym. If you found that home workouts have been what's helped you and made you fit and strong and mentally sound, continue that. No one's saying you can't. There's still going to be all these online options available to you. But if you're someone that's motivated by, you know, the outside world, the thought of holidays, etc., use that motivation. Use it. You know, my mum, for example, she knows I'm going to come back soon and we're hoping to do a Cornwall holiday in hopefully June. We'll see how things go. She's walking every day now. She wasn't, because suddenly she feels we're going to be doing coastal walks. There's a purpose, you know. So whatever you need, I think, to come transition out this time, do it. Don't feel you have to do something that everybody else is doing or the world is moving towards. I think whatever works for you is what's most important at the moment, because it's interesting. There's people bursting to get out and there's people scared, and I think that's a real thing.
Yeah, and I think so. And I think you're absolutely right. I think we spent a lot of time thinking about what's work going to be like. Mm-hmm. But actually, you know, our own fitness, our own mental resilience, we have lots of different options now. We don't just have to do the run in the park, the cycle, or the gym. We know that we can have a whole new world with amazing people like you. And you were part of our Power Up Festival, which was fantastic. Yes.
That was wonderful. That was so great. Just people coming together from all over, you know, different parts of the world. And I think that's what this past year has done for us. It showed us that we don't have to be in the same place. We don't have to travel to sort of feel connected. And I think, and I hope that I want to be physically connected with people again, but I hope that continues when those times aren't possible.
Yeah. Well, do you know, Caroline, you might have had ice as your nickname as a gladiator, but you're not ice-like at all. You're very strong.
No.
But, you know, it's so lovely to talk to you. I think
your energy
is just so infectious. And, you know, look forward to spending lots more time with you over the future.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Bye. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed Reset the Podcast, I'd love it if you would forward it to your work colleagues, friends and family. Reset the Podcast is a Let's Reset and Advertising Week global production. Executive producer is Richard Larson, with me, Suki Thompson. Thanks to our sponsor, Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits, and voiceover artist, Talitha Penny. Music provided by Audio Network.